This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Drug or alcohol use by a woman during pregnancy can harm the unborn baby and pose serious health risks for the newborn. Although many pregnant women fear the repercussions of having their drug or alcohol use exposed, recovering from substance abuse is much safer than giving birth while actively addicted. Joining us to discuss treating pregnant women struggling with addiction and their newborns, our First Home Step Medical Director and Medical Director of the HOPE Program at Good Samaritan Hospital, Dr. Michael Marcotte, a maternal fetal medicine specialist with Tri-State Maternal Fetal Medicine Associates, President and CEO of First Step Home, Margot Spence, and First Step Home Maternal Services Coordinator, Jean Cole. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Margot, Mike, Jean, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Mike, tell us about HOPE, though. What does HOPE stand for, and what is that program about?
Our program stands for Helping Opiate-Addicted Pregnant Women Recover.
Okay. And tell us a little bit more about the program. What kind of services are you offering?
So we're an enhanced pregnancy care program. So we provide prenatal care. We also have case management and social work services. We have a community health worker who works out in the community outside of the medical care side of things, working with women to continue to support them in the community. And we really consider ourselves partners with many of the agencies within Cincinnati who help care for pregnant women. So we work most closely with First Step Home and some of the other outpatient treatment programs. And we also correspond and work tightly with the medication-assisted treatment programs, which provide medications for the women to help them with their recovery.
Mm-hmm. Jean, tell us about how First Step and HOPE work together.
Oh, we work very closely together. When we get a call asking for treatment, the first thing we do is send them to First Step or to Good Sam to get medically, stabilized, I guess. And then we have an assessment immediately, and we coordinate the care. Dr. Marcotte and HOPE get the women connected to some kind of medication-assisted treatment because they have to do that. You cannot detox a pregnant woman, obviously. And so the three agencies partner together very well. When the woman comes in, she has so many issues. Recovery itself is a huge, huge issue, but so is pregnancy. And there's a lot of guilt and shame. There's a lot of questions, a lot of relationship issues, health issues. So the first couple of weeks, we spend just helping her really get stabilized and continue her prenatal care, getting to know our program and sort of settling in.
Margot, how important is this kind of collaboration between all the agencies? This is such a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's absolutely essential to have partners in the community. There's no way that First Step Home can do it alone, and we recognize that. We have others that specialize in different areas that are very important for the success of our clients and their children, and that's what it's all about.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us in our conversation. You can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Mike, what are the health risks of opiate addiction during pregnancy?
So I think one of the biggest risks is the risk of overdose. So if you overdose, you stop breathing. And if you're not resuscitated, you'll die. And if you die, then your fetus will die. So that's really the biggest risk that we worry about. But many women who have used IV drugs over time have developed other medical conditions, which are very rare in the non-IV drug-using population. Most commonly, we see hepatitis C. It's an infection that causes inflammation of the liver. It's a chronic infection that, left untreated, can lead to liver cancer or liver failure later in life. But it also has a risk of being passed to the baby at the time of birth. And so that's one big risk. We also see conditions related to heart valve infections, because often when women or men inject IV drugs, the needle or the chemicals in the IV solution are contaminated with bacteria, and that bacteria can infect the heart valves. And that can lead to very serious conditions for young people, which are almost unheard of in the non-drug-using population.
And of course, all this causes increased complications in pregnancy, and exactly. A lot of this it can affect the newborn as well.
Yeah. So one of the things that we see quite often with opiate addiction is this chronic kind of intoxication and then withdrawal. That's characteristic of opiate addiction. And that is very stressful for the fetus. And we've seen an increased rate of stillbirths and infant deaths related to that withdrawing and then intoxication that occurs. So getting a woman into treatment is critical to help improve her chances to have a successful pregnancy. And in the newborn period, about 30 to 50% of babies will develop a withdrawal syndrome called neonatal abstinence syndrome if they've been chronically exposed to opiates, where when the opiates wear off after they're delivered, they begin to develop withdrawal symptoms. And left untreated, those can be very serious and life-threatening and occasionally even lead to a death of a newborn if untreated. So it's really becoming more and more of a problem in our neonatal ICU units across the country. That they're needing to be treated with medication to help prevent or treat the withdrawal. And then they're slowly tapered off of medications like morphine or methadone are actually used in newborns who develop this syndrome, and they have to be tapered off.
Is there a chance that if the mother has an addiction, that the child develops an addiction later in life themselves?
So definitely there's an increased correlation with addiction in families. So it's not directly related to the newborn or the infant fetal exposure to the opiates, but it's rather the whole picture of what addiction is. A baby may be born dependent, but not addicted. Addiction is a disease that entails both a physical dependency and a behavioral modification because of that dependency that leads to adverse outcomes like prostitution, illegal activities, behaviors that are related to neglecting health and well-being, taking risks. These are the behaviors that are affected by the dependency.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. Gene, how do you help mothers get through this?
You know, I think as you pointed out, babies are not born addicted; they're born dependent. And all the guilt and shame the mothers have, we have to give them hope in some way. We have learned over the years that I think Marianne said earlier, there's so much trauma involved. And what we've started doing in the last few years is using the ACE survey, which is a question that was generated by. Kaiser Permanente, this huge hospital, did an enormous study, I think, in 2002 with 17,000 people in their hospitals. And they presented them with this survey, which is 10 questions relating to births from birth to age 18 and the traumatic situations they had in their homes. And then Kaiser Permanente went back to the hospital records with these 17,000 people and connected that to what their diagnoses were. It was often heart trouble. It was all kinds of risk behavior, smoking, mental illness, addiction. And so we started administering that survey to the women at First Step when they came into our program. And we've found a huge numbers that are just huge. I think they determined that anyone who said yes to four or more of those questions had a very increased likelihood of becoming involved with drugs or alcohol. And anyone who has higher than four, you know, five, six, seven, eight, it just keeps increasing, increasing, increasing. And some of our clients have 10. They've had a horrible trauma. And when we can help them see that they're not a bad person who made a horrible choice and became addicted, that maybe this childhood experience may have led that path to, that just laid the foundation or a path to seeking ways to cope and get away from it all. And so when they can kind of see that that's, you know, maybe a possibility, they still oftentimes want to blame themselves and feel bad, but it's a process. We have to work through that. But we really have to help them see that they have a disease. And I think we were talking earlier when someone has diabetes, you know, we don't expect them just to live this perfect life with never eat a cookie and be well forever. This is a lifelong recovery program, and it's something that affects the brain. And so, you know, the behavior during active addiction is so horrendous that people have a hard time not being judgmental. But when they first come in, they still have all that going on in their head, and we have to really help them with structure. They need a lot of structure, and they don't like it often, but I tell them this is going to heal your brain. We really have to accept them where they are, meet them where they are.
I think it's, you know, one of the things to realize about this disease is there is a huge behavioral component. And it's often a behavioral component that's hard to work with for healthcare and behavioral health workers because we're often faced with chronic lying or deceit, trying to manipulate the system. And what we need to do as providers is really approach them without judgment and a willingness to keep saying, you know, that was yesterday. You made a mistake yesterday. Let's start again today. Let's try again. And what we're trying to do is provide an environment very different to the environment that these women have often experienced in their whole life, where they've had to use those manipulative behaviors to try to survive, and literally to survive. So I think what we're trying to do is to establish a common theme across all of our treatment centers, whether it's in the hospital, whether it's at the addiction treatment center, whether it's at First Step Home or a behavioral treatment center, common theme of non-judgment, a willingness to continue to re-approach the woman and say, let's try again. We know that this is difficult, but you can trust us. We are going to care for you. We're not going to use you. We're not going to treat you poorly. Our goal is your goal. And women are amazing. Our pregnant women really have one. They're very clear. They have a clear path that they're looking for when they approach us for help. They want to have a healthy pregnancy. They want sobriety. They really do not like how it is to be addicted to opiates. And thirdly, they want to parent. They want to care for their children. They have great desire to care well for their children. And if we can build our system, our program around those three goals, we really can help the majority of our patients.
Is looking at addiction as a disease, is that more of a recent trend?
It is, and I think that we're beginning to see the similarities to the disease when we look at both the motivation that the patient has, but also when we look at the outcomes and how to best work with those patients. We get a much better outcome if we approach this as a disease, which there is growing evidence from the neurochemistry and neurobiological studies that shows that there are actual physical changes that occur in the brain, similar to physical changes that occur in the brain of somebody who has diabetes or some other chronic disease. And the best way to help with that, to change those physical changes, are actually to work with some medications to stabilize the patient, but then significant component of behavioral modification.
If I could just add, I know a lot of people say, but you chose to take that first drink, you chose to use that needle. But really what it is, it's a disease of choice. It's a disease that affects your choices, and you can't make good choices when your brain is taken over by this drive to just get the drug. So it's instead of a moral issue, it needs to be a medical and a social issue. So,
do you think, Gene, that by treating it as a disease, it's going to help. It's going to help us make more rapid progress in dealing with this problem?
I think it's probably the only disease of its kind, so it's harder to explain why that is, why it is a disease. And again, going back to the behavior, but absolutely, when people become educated, they start to understand. When people come to the family education, they're like, "Why can't she just stop?" They're tearful. Their lives are just a mess. The families are too. And once we start talking about it, and they sit around the table with all the women there, and they're sharing. It's not just their loved one, but they're hearing from seven or eight other women. They start to get a sense of why they couldn't just stop. And we talk about enabling and structure, and the difference between enabling and being supportive. And over time, families seem to come around and understand that it is something they can't just stop, you know. So we even have a vocational educator now. So that's been a huge asset. It's not just all the treatment and the housing, but it's getting them connected to a job, you know, and that's a really big step. So,
yeah, I think when you really look at it in the disease model, it allows you to put the stigma aside and really to address it as you would compare it to diabetes or any other disease. And I think that's very helpful for people, and they're more willing to help the client or to be more, to find ways to better engage the client. And that's the piece that I really appreciate with all of our partners. I think that's our commonality there, that we want to do what's best in the best interest of this client and do whatever's necessary to engage the client for their best interest and the best interest of the baby.
Margo, what about follow-up? Is there any coordination among local hospitals and clinics to reach out to pregnant women who are addicted after they've gone through their treatment and see how they're doing?
Yes, and I think that that's a growing area, and I think we're beginning to put more and more emphasis on that, even with the managed care companies. They have care managers that are also working with our clients, even making home visits and many other kinds of new services that are helping clients once they complete the treatment phase of our programming and, you know, dealing with them in their homes as well.
How important is that follow-up, Michael?
I think it's essential. And again, this a model of addiction being a disease, you realize that it's not curable. It's not something that you can take a medicine or go through a treatment program and then you're cured and you don't have to worry about it. It is a lifelong condition that requires diligence both for the woman or the man who's addicted, but also for the community. And looking at some of the root causes of the traumas that have occurred is one of our ways to begin to approach it. And the way we know about these things is we engage in the community, not just in our healthcare settings or in our behavioral settings or treatment programs, but really out in the community. So I think that's one of the newest things that we're really trying to work towards here in Ohio is more engagement in the community to both deal with the systemic problems, but also to work towards follow-up and building community, you know, using the model of the AA and Narcotics Anonymous, where there's a community that's built around supporting recovery.
Gene, do you more often see cases, though, where the woman might not be getting any support from the family, or do you see cases where the family is offering support? I mean, what's more common?
I don't know that one's more common than the other. They're both fairly common. But the women who don't have a lot of family support, they often have to reach out and just be open to creating new family relationships with their peers, with a sponsor, with the treatment providers. And it can be very successful. But the longer they stay and connected to services, the better the outcome. Mm-hmm. And that's research-based. I know I can't give you the name of the research right
well,
now, but I know that's true.
We definitely have seen that in our pregnant patients. When we look at successful pregnancy outcomes, the women who stay engaged in behavioral treatment throughout pregnancy and after pregnancy have much better outcomes than women who relapse during pregnancy, fall out of treatment, much higher risk that the babies will go through withdrawal, much higher risk that the mom will not complete her prenatal care in the optimal way, much more likely that she will not take the baby home with her because of social service issues, homelessness. So the treatment, the behavioral treatment is really the foundation that needs to be thought of in a treatment program.
That sounds like support from family is a very important element.
It is, and I think, you know, it goes back to that issue of how families have been treated by the disease, and they're affected by the disease when it's active. And so there's a healing that needs to occur both for the person, but also for her family. And one of the things that we're seeing as a growing problem is that addiction is in the family. It's actively in the family. And so turning towards that family is not necessarily in the best interest for that mom because she would be turning back towards the addiction.
Is there a thought, Mike, that addiction has a genetic basis?
I think there is some predisposition that we've begun to understand. I'm not an expert in that area, but just attending many of the seminars and studying this disease over the years as it affects pregnancy, we definitely know that there is some genetic markers for virtually every disease.
Gene, how much does going through treatment to increase the likelihood of a successful outcome for mom and baby?
Oh, I think a lot. I mean, again, it's the time they stay involved. It's how they get involved. You know, and for when they have this baby, they get very excited, but then they become fearful as well. Or when they reunify with a child, they come and tell me, I'm getting my child back. And then you see the fear set in about, will I be able to parent this child? So the longer they have to talk about these fears, to bring everything out in the open, I really believe that people relapse because they don't get to their core issues, and they keep trying to cope on top of things and just cover up and keep going. So the more they stay in treatment, build relationships, and get really honest with themselves in a safe setting, learn that they deserve respect, they deserve happiness, the better the outcome. But they really do have to do that, or they really can't bond with their babies if they don't reclaim themselves. They have to really kind of love themselves again before they can be a good parent.
I can provide some data around some outcomes. Again,
if you can do it kind of quickly here, because we've got about 15 seconds, Mike.
Yes.
Sorry.
So one study showed that if a woman was not in treatment and continued to use heroin, 90% risk of the baby developing neonatal abstinence syndrome. Whereas if they were in treatment on medication, the risk went down to 20 to 30%.
So quite a likelihood that this is going to raise your chances of success.
Yes.
Well, thank you for joining me today. First Step Home Medical Director and Medical Director of the HOPE Program at Good Samaritan Hospital, Dr. Michael Marcotte, a maternal fetal medicine specialist with Tri-State Maternal Fetal Medicine Associates, President and CEO of First Step Home, Margot Spence, and First Step Home Maternal Services Coordinator, Gene Cole.